more about it, is totally, definitely not an impersonator, but the actual Ron Johnson.
When you guys are out here talking about, oh, you know, the roads are tough and, you know, it's, here are some issues in Wisconsin, like election map. You know, talk to me when you get inside an alien spaceship and actually talk to an alien, okay? Because that's something that I'm interested in, because that's what Wisconsin families want to know. What's going on inside with those little guys?
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. We are one third of the way through a very fun, big show. At the top of the next hour, Dave Mendel.
Famous person.
Famous person. One of our most famous people. At least our most Hollywood person so far.
Oh, yeah.
Besides Ariel, when she got the beer thrown at her. But yeah, so that'll be in the no sour, haha, fun time hour. We are going to be pitching potential new Wisconsin shows to this Hollywood bigwig. See if anything sticks.
We got some good ones.
We could be showrunners.
Oh, in a heartbeat. I don't even know what it means, but sure.
Okay,
we can do
we'll
that.
Ask it. Well, what is a showrunner? All right, but this hour during this segment, we are talking to Benjamin Garbedian. I do this all the time. Benjamin Garbedian of Waukesha, who is a senior at Carroll University studying political science and communications, and he currently serves as the Hamilton Raddus Student Fellow at the Institute for Reforming Government, and recently, this week, had an op-ed published in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel talking about a problem I didn't even really know existed, because we've talked, this is the year of mental health, according to Governor Evers, talking about all the different investments we could be making for mental health, and like so many other professions, in Wisconsin, there is a shortage. And Benjamin, you were very open and honest about some of your own mental health issues and what it took to try to find help, and that it was kind of a struggle. And so let's just start there as far as how you happened upon this problem.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me, Kristen. I appreciate it. So last year was a heck of a year for a lot of people, myself included, and between work, school, volunteering, family life, social life, all the things that happen in a given day, especially to a 20-year-old, the just stress kind of caught up to me, and I began having symptoms of things where I needed mental health care. And so some stuff happened in October, and I decided, okay, I need to start looking for professional help here. And as I'm looking, I'm realizing that every single clinic or person or institution that I talked to or looked at the website or called was booking out weeks, if you were lucky, months on average in advance, and was really hard to find people. Now, I ended up finding one. I got lucky. My parents have pretty good insurance, and that's how I ended up getting the help that I needed. But most people don't have that, mm-hmm. and so I started looking for ways. I'm a bit of a nerd, and I like public policy, and so I started looking for ways to sort of make see what caused the problem and see how the problem can be fixed. And so the op-ed came about when we were watching the State of the State a couple months ago now, and the governor obviously declared it the year of mental health, and he wants to spend $500 million across 40 agencies helping mental health in Wisconsin, which I think is an admirable goal, but in my opinion, they're sort of looking at more complex solutions and overlooking really simple ones. And a simple one is that this is a supply and demand problem, and there is a lot of demand for mental health care right now. There's not enough supply. They're just physically not enough therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists in Wisconsin to provide help for the amount of people that need it. And so one thing that we can do is, in Wisconsin, if you want to practice and be a mental health provider, you have to be licensed by the state in order to practice, just like doctors, lawyers, any number of other professions. But every state requires this. And so if you're licensed in Illinois to be a therapist, we think that you should be licensed in Wisconsin to be a therapist, because there's no qualifications different to treat Wisconsinites than there are to treat Illinoisans or people in California or Alaskans, for that matter. And so our idea is that we just open up the licensure laws and make it voluntary, or we make it reciprocity. So reciprocity just means that if you're a therapist in California, you can be a therapist in Wisconsin without any extra tests, fees, or bureaucratic red tape.
And it was interesting when I read your article, because I think I've heard solutions in, like I said, there's so many different industries right now that there's a labor shortage in. Yep. And one of which is teachers. Mm-hmm. And so I've had some people make the argument that we should lower the standards or lower the requirements to become a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a healthy debate on whether or not that's a good thing. I would say probably most people who work with people who have in mental health, mm-hmm. we don't want to lower the standards,
right?
We want you to finish all of your hours. We want to make sure you've passed the test. We want to make sure you've had the training, because these are sensitive, fragile situations that we want good people helping
qualified people.
And so I didn't realize, and I think maybe on the surface level, I understood state licensing. Like my best friend who's been on the show graduated with a PhD in psychology. He didn't know where to get his license because once he graduated, he didn't know where he was going to end up. And similar to how lawyers, if they move, they have to retake the bar unless there's some, I mean, I think there is some reciprocity between like California and New York and some
couple
places.
Interstate compacts, yeah.
But I didn't realize it's the same thing for mental health professionals. And so you have to go through, and do you know what the rigmarole becomes to get relicensed if you move?
Yeah, it is. It's hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars.
So you just basically have to restart.
Yeah. I mean, you still have your college degree, but you have to restart the licensure process, and it can take up to 18 months. I mean, there are documented cases of people who moved from California, say, and come to Wisconsin, and you have to take a year and a half of your life. And the thing is, while you're doing that process, you can't be practicing your job. So you're not making money. So you're essentially dipping into your savings, and it's not profitable for you to do it because you have no ability to make money doing the thing that you're trained to do because you're retraining to do it a second time.
Yeah. So it seems a little, so people basically just don't do it then.
Yeah.
And even with the advancements of telehealth and so many more people now doing Zoom, or I think of the ads I get for like BetterHelp or like the texting,
I get those ads
and therapists.
All the time.
And so is it because of the limitations when you do something through with telehealth with someone who may or may not live in Wisconsin? Is it basically like in order for your insurance, your Wisconsin-based insurance to cover it, it also has to be a Wisconsin, or is there something messy there as well?
The insurance is based mainly on the insurance providers, and I'll just say I'm not an expert on that. But actually the interesting thing about it is that there are people in Illinois, say Rockford, who are qualified therapists who just can't practice with people across the state lines. And the thing was, in the pandemic, they could. In the pandemic, we relaxed the rules for 18 months while the emergency order was effective because we needed nurses. And it was the governor signed that emergency order for all healthcare professionals, mental and physical and everything. And so we needed nurses, and we did that, and it helped during the pandemic. It provided a lot more healthcare providers. But those rules went away when the pandemic thing went. And so there were people who were qualified to provide mental health care in Illinois who became qualified in Wisconsin for a short period of time and are now no longer qualified. And nothing changed about them, and nothing changed about their patients. The only thing that changed was the laws. But to your point about technology, every single therapy session that I've had as a result of the healthcare that I'm seeking has been over Zoom. I've never met my therapist in person.
Hmm.
And so my therapist is in Brookfield or Madison or wherever they happen to be. I don't care, really.
Yeah.
If they're in Florida, if they're in Alaska, they're still helping me. It's an hour-long Zoom session. It's what I need. Doesn't really matter to me where they are. But if I'm talking to a qualified person, that would help if we expanded the pool of people that it applies to.
We're talking to Benjamin Garbedian about mental health and access to mental health. And I think a pretty obvious idea as far as opening up the, not lowering the standards of mental health professionals, but opening it up as far as, because we have a shortage and we don't have enough people in Wisconsin right now to meet demand of not only just young people, but everyone who needs mental health as we become as a society more aware of the importance of it, by opening it up and allowing more people to practice, no matter where their license is, it can actually meet that demand. And so I guess, what is the pushback on this? Or like who doesn't want something like this to happen?
There aren't a lot of people who are vocally fighting against it,
okay,
because vocally fighting against mental health care is just a bad look for most people. The main argument comes actually from providers who are in Wisconsin, who don't want to don't want to increase supply because then they have to face competition. But it's not a stringent pushback. I think the main pushback just comes from ignorance. I don't think there's a lobbying force against this. I think the main pushback is more just no one knows that this is a problem and no one knows that this is a solution. Everyone thinks that the solution we have to do is to spend a lot of money or radically change a program or something. And maybe we do, but I think first we should try the very simple thing that's in front of us.
Because what would change? So it's basically instead of... It's not necessarily that we have an untapped pool of people living in Wisconsin. It's basically allowing people to the patients to live in Wisconsin and through telehealth see people who are outside of Wisconsin or licensed in other places.
Yep. Yeah. So nothing would change in terms of their licensing or things with patients or any of that stuff. The only thing that would change would be I can see people outside of Wisconsin because they are now qualified to treat people in Wisconsin. Because currently, it's called the Department of Safety and Professional Services, DSPS. DSPS has said that they operate the test and they collect the fees and do all of that bureaucracy. They are not told that they have to accept people who are licensed in other states. They're treated as if you come into Wisconsin as a blank slate, even if you have prior experience.
Hmm. This is super interesting. And it's a fascinating issue that seems very like a very simple solution. And so it'd be interesting to see, have you gotten any like feelers out into the policy world of people who might actually be able to do something about this?
Yeah. So IRG Action is going to start talking to lawmakers in the coming months to try and change this or clarify the legislation to make sure that this is a solution that we can use and we can make available to as many Wisconsinites as possible. So I can't say we've had extensive conversations yet, but I mean, just personally, from the piece was published on Tuesday, I've heard from dozens of friends of mine, both conservatives and liberals, who say like, yeah, this is an obvious solution to a really hard-hitting problem. And I don't think it's particularly partisan. I think it's just something we need to raise awareness on.
Isn't it great when that happens?
I love it.
When you're like,
happens.
Oh, people can actually agree on something. Yeah. This is like an obvious thing that we should do and not like we're not going to have politics get in the way.
It's
that
a refreshing,
is great.
Refreshing break from election
season. All right.
Season.
Well, we're going to take a break. Benjamin Garbedian will still be here when we come back. Maybe we'll talk a little bit bigger picture of what's going on with kids, man. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
If you ever find yourself stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you. If you ever find yourself lost in the dark and you can't see, I'll be the light.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. Good song choice.
Thank you.
That is Jane Matinair, and we are talking to Benjamin Garbedian. See, once I got it, I got it.
Once you got it, you got it.
Who is a senior at Carroll University studying political science and communications and is currently a Hamilton Rodas student fellow at the Institute for Reforming Government. And we're talking about his very simple solution, seemingly, about how to fix our mental health provider shortage, because it feels like this is being talked about a lot, not just young people, but especially young people. I mean, I think it's in this last month of just more and more reports on teenagers not doing great. And, you know, people want to blame phones. We had a big conversation yesterday about doomerism and the conversations around how bad the world is and how much that influences. And so, not to make you speak on the behalf of all young people, but as someone who's 20, you know, so high school wasn't that far long ago. You're from Waukesha originally. So I guess, like, when you hear those headlines and those studies of how poorly the mental health is for young people right now, does that resonate? Are they missing something in the conversation that's being had?
Yeah, I mean, I'm 22, so I'm a couple years.
Oh, you're 22. Why did I say? Really? I don't know where I got 20 from.
So I'm a couple years out of teenage years, but
you're closer than I am.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, no, it definitely resonates. I think the thing that's missing mainly is that a lot of I want to say adults, because it still feels like I'm a kid. I'm not, but older people want to blame it on one thing, like, yeah, oh, it's phones, or it's TikTok, or it's whatever it is. And it's not one thing. It's kind of that it's the totality of the circumstances that are coming, but it definitely resonates. I mean, my generation is more open with our mental health with each other than previous ones at all. I was talking yesterday with some of my coworkers at IRG, and we were saying that, like, they went to college 10, 15 years ago, which is not that long ago, and their friend groups never talked about it. It was still taboo. It was still very much a thing that just wasn't mentioned. And this is a thing that all of us talk about. I mean, we will have conversations about, oh, you know, I'm going to therapy tonight. This is what my therapist said. Oh, you know, feeling a little down today. Like, we are better with mental health care. And I think it's a good thing that we're destigmatizing it.
It is a good thing. So do you think some of it is also just having the language that we didn't, I mean, certainly Jane's age, but even, I mean, because I saw a therapist in high school, because I also had a friend who committed suicide. And so there was, and this was the early aughts. And so it kind of took something that was like a pretty tragic event for my parents to be like, all right, like, yeah, you should probably go talk to someone. But we certainly, I'm trying to think, like, what you were just explaining, if that feels like, I feel like there was some of that. Mm-hmm. Certainly more as a woman.
Okay.
I think that was true, but it's interesting that as young men,
yeah,
that you find, so with your guy friends, like, you guys talk about this?
Occasionally.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it's a topic of we sit down and discuss it and it's an agendized thing, but it's a thing that none of us are afraid to bring up in conversation. And so I think that's a good thing, just because it's good to know that you're getting help, and it's good to see people and to be able to confide in your friends some of those things, because also your friends can be a stronger support network if they fully know what's going on. And mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of community support, I think.
Yeah. And it's, that is a solution that I don't think, or a theory.
Yeah.
I'm not sure most people have been talking about, is that it's maybe more prevalent because your generation and younger has the language to talk about it in a way that was just not talked about before. And so is it that it's increased rates, mm-hmm. or is it that kids just weren't, that wasn't something you talked about because your parents didn't talk about it and therapy was bad and nothing was wrong with you and you just go to church and you figure it out. And
you, like, suck it up.
You suck it up.
Yeah.
And you work hard and you don't cry. And so, like, do you think that is part of it too? That it's not necessarily even that there is so many external forces causing an issue, but it's also just knowing how to talk about the issue?
Yeah, I think that's an accurate way to put it. Obviously, I don't know what my parents did or didn't have, but
yeah.
I mean, it's never really been a taboo thing with me and my friends. And I can't say that it isn't with other people. There may be people for whom it's still a subject that's not brought up, but it's definitely greater into the mainstream awareness. Of something that everyone just realizes. I mean, physical health has always been a thing. If you're going to get a physical, if you're going to get an eye exam or something, no one's afraid to mention that.
Yeah.
This is the same type of thing. I mean, for me, seeing a therapist is very similar to just getting a checkup. It's some weeks, nothing really has gone wrong. Nothing's really happened. We don't talk about anything deep, but it's just making sure that there's something there and that you know and that you're constantly checking on it.
Yeah. I guess which I do think is a very simple solution as far as being able to have, what was the term for it? Universal licensure?
Universal licensure or licensure reciprocity.
And so explain this, in case people are just joining, explain one more time what that would look like.
Sure. So it basically looks like in Wisconsin, if you want to be a therapist, you have to be licensed by the Wisconsin state government to be a therapist. But there are people that are licensed by the governments of Minnesota, California, everywhere that are therapists. Every state does it. And so our solution would be that if the government of Minnesota or the government of Iowa has declared that you can be a therapist, you're qualified to be a therapist in Wisconsin, because there's materially nothing different about treating Wisconsinites than there is about treating Iowans.
That doesn't seem complicated.
I was going to say, Jay, do you have any? Sometimes you find the holes to poke.
I just don't see why this is a thing. This shouldn't be a difficult obstacle.
I'd agree. Yeah.
Well, I guess I'm excited to see as IRG tries to make some inroads in different and get in the ears of some lawmakers that maybe this is an easy solution, as far as the year of mental health and trying to open the doors for that. Obviously, I think there's other things because you still got to pay for it. So there's other things as far as access to people who need it but can't pay for it. And so this is a big web of trying to fix things. But this seems like a very easy solution. And like, hats off to you for writing the op-ed. We'll put it in today's show notes so you guys can read it. It's excellent.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me on.
But Benjamin Garbedian is from Waukesha. He goes to Carroll University. He wrote this article, and we'll have to have you back as the resident young person.
That sounds great. Thank you.
All right. This is As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be right back.
What friends are supposed to do, oh yeah. Ooh, ooh. You can count on me, cause I can count.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. And I love the concept of this camp that we recently found out about. It's called Camp to Belong, which is a nonprofit children's camp that reunites siblings who are going through the foster system and maybe have been separated through different child welfare systems. But it helps them reconnect at a summer camp. And so here to talk more about the program is Erin Vivian, who's the assistant director of Camp to Belong. Welcome to the show, Erin.
Hi there. Thank you for having me.
So it's again, what we were just talking about, very obvious solutions, but it seems so. I mean, I guess maybe explain the problem sometimes when children, especially siblings, enter the foster care system, they're not always able to be kept together, right?
Correct. It actually happens, I discovered about 10 years ago, more often than we think, that siblings are pulled from the home for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. And just because, I mean, we don't have as many foster homes as we need. We don't have, you know, as many family members that can take in all the kids due to whatever circumstances are happening. So unfortunately, so often the kids are split up. Maybe the brothers get to stay with each other. Maybe the sisters do. Otherwise, it's just a big mix of things, which I understand it's complex and it's a complicated thing. And these social workers are faced with, well, what do we do? They need to be, you know, they have to have a roof over their head. Mm-hmm. And so often it just means we have to split them up, which is just so unfortunate that we don't put more of an emphasis on keeping the siblings together. But, you know, unfortunately it happens. And that's why we do what we do at camp.
Erin, what do you hear from kids who have been in this situation? What did it mean for them to be separated from their siblings? What kind of impacts did that have on them?
For so many of them, it really crushes them. And we get them to camp, and we'll get them to camp several years in a row, and they'll tell us each year that, wow, this is literally the only time I've seen my sibling. I haven't seen them since camp last year, which is just wild to me. I understand that things are complicated sometimes, but I think making sure the siblings at least get to see each other regularly, if they can't live together, I think is an easy priority that we should be making.
And so you said you found out about this 10 years ago. And so what was your connection to, were you volunteering or how did you get involved in kind of navigating the Wisconsin foster care system?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't even do this in my everyday life. I'm typically a web designer in my day-to-day job. And about 10 years ago, I watched a movie that had something similar to this, where you could just go and be a volunteer camp counselor. And it was a really good movie. So I looked up if I could do something like this. And I got on Google and I found that there's a Camp to Belong Colorado. So I went out and I went out to Colorado and just helped them as just a straight, you know, volunteer camp counselor for the week. And I loved it. And they told me about a husband and wife from Wisconsin that wanted to start one in Wisconsin. And so I got back from Colorado and I immediately reached out to them and helped, you know, just get it started. And now we're 10 years later, we're on our ninth year of the Wisconsin camp. And now I'm the assistant director. I'm on the board. I'm very, very involved now, it's just been a great journey. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And so the current Camp to Belong, is in Fox Valley, right?
Yes. So our current camp that we've been doing, we'll do our ninth summer this summer, is up in Plymouth at a beautiful camp called Camp Anikiji. And we've always served all 72 counties in Wisconsin. However, the week that we have always had to do camp is the third week in August. And that, unfortunately, is typically the week that kids are going back to school in Milwaukee County. So we've never been able to serve Milwaukee County. So we finally are like, how do we do this? Well, our solution is just starting a second camp. So that's what we're doing. And this year, we're just starting with a half a year this July. So July 20th through the 22nd, we'll have our first Milwaukee-like focused camp at a beautiful camp in Heartland. It's the Boys and Girls Club camp called Camp Whitcomb Mason. So we're very excited. And it's I'm from Milwaukee, so this is my city.
Oh,
so
nice.
I'm very excited that we're finally being able to serve, you know, my kids in my city. So it's very exciting.
We're talking to Erin Vivian, who is the assistant director for Camp to Belong, a nonprofit children's camp that reunites siblings who have been separated because of the child welfare system. And so I guess, could you kind of paint a picture of what camp looks like?
Sure. I mean, it's in a way, it's everything that you would think camp would be. You know, we get to use all of the facilities at the host camp that we rent. So there's swimming, there's boating, there's fishing, there's challenge courses, there's arts and crafts, there's all of those things. And then Camp to Belong has our own signature programs that we always do. We always do a big carnival bash with bouncy houses and cotton candy and face painting and all that stuff. We always have a birthday party night. So typically it's kind of too bad when you start thinking about, well, geez, so these kids don't get to see each other on their birthday. So what we do is we have a night where it's everyone's birthday. They get to give each other birthday presents, birthday cards, throw cake in each other's faces, you name it. Have just a big, beautiful birthday party, which is always really almost a little bit of an emotional night because these kids are realizing that they don't get this on their actual birthday, and it's kind of too bad, but they have a blast. And we always end with a closing campfire, and it's amazing to see how some of those kids who were too shy to talk in front of everyone at the opening campfire are getting up there and just describing like how amazing of a week they had and just how much they're going to just miss their sibling after they leave camp. And it really pulls at your heartstrings.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing experience.
And so with what organizations are you working with as far as like the kids, how do the kids or the kids foster parents or the system, how do they know about the camp? And so like how many kids are you having every year? What are the age ranges? Like how do they find out about it?
Sure. Typically at our regular camp a little further up north, we have had up to 60 campers in a week. With COVID, we kind of got knocked back down. So we're building that back up. And this year for the Milwaukee camp, we're aiming to have 30 campers. And to be honest, we always have a heavy flow of camper referrals come in. So we're not short on finding campers.
Okay.
The main problem is having the counselors to be able to be with us for the week to support that. Because we go with a 2-to-1 ratio. So if we have 30 campers, we want 15 volunteer counselors, you know, there with us. So that's, if anything, that's the harder part to find is the counselor. So we're always in need.
What kind of qualifications are you looking for, Erin, for people who might want to volunteer and help out?
Honestly, it doesn't have to be anything specific. Just, you know, do you enjoy working with kids? I mean, we're not there. We're not a therapy camp. We're just a therapeutic experience for the kids. So you don't have, look at me, I'm just a web designer. I had no experience with social work, any of that before getting involved with camp. And, you know, it really, there's nothing specific. You just have to have the willingness to, you know, be with the kids and hang out with them and also enjoy maybe a few bugs and stuff because we are out at a cabin.
Jane's out.
So.
But I can glue things and I can glue like popsicle sticks together. And I think that could be a useful skill.
Well, yeah. Anything is useful to us. I mean, we'll take even day volunteers. We'll take even just organizations that, you know, make quilts. They just want to donate quilts to us so that we can give them all to the kids. Whatever it is, there's always so many ways to get involved. Even just donating on our website because we are 100% volunteer run. So we just have to do fundraisers and apply for grants. And that's, we always have to hustle with that stuff, but it's fun.
It is really fun. And so for, if you're looking for volunteers now, obviously, the Milwaukee camp is happening. And so as far as like, is there going to be people who double dip or are you still looking for people who can do either camp, both camps, but I guess more information for anyone who's listening who potentially would want to, I kind of, I mean, can we take the week off and go do this? Can we do the show from? You think some of those kids want to? You think that some of the kids want to be on the radio?
I think that they would. I think there's some of them that would. But yes, so our regular camp, which is always the full week, is up in Plymouth at a beautiful camp called Camp Anakiji, and that's August 13th through the 18th. So we'll always take volunteers for both camps.
Of course.
We'll always take that. And then the Milwaukee camp is, the commitment would be July 19th through the 22nd. So if you have a few days that you can take off of work or whatnot, you know, we would happily have you.
And do they sleep on the ground? Do volunteers sleep on the ground? Do they have to build their own shelter? Do they, you know, what kind of setup do you have for volunteers?
So typically, you know, up north we have, you know, wonderful cabins that we use, and it's always a lot of fun. And then at the Milwaukee camp, we're actually, it's really just a big lodge with almost like dorm cabins. So with air conditioning and heat and all that stuff. So, and plumbing. So no, it's not totally roughing it in the woods, you know, with just making mud huts and stuff, but it's, you definitely get to experience the wilderness, but you get a nice bed with sheets and a pillow at night. So it's nice.
A few comforts from home.
Exactly. Yeah. So I guess
comforts from home.
Going back to kind of the problem, and the problem is sometimes kids in the foster care system are often because of limitations on where they need to go, and they need someone to take care of them, they need a roof over their heads, they get separated from their siblings. And how often are they going to like different parts of the state and they're not even necessarily like in the same city? Or like, is that part of the issue when it comes to how infrequently they get to see each other?
That's part of the issue, definitely. You know, we have experiences where some family members can take a few kids and they live up north, but they can't take all the kids. And then some of the kids are on the other side of the state. That definitely happens. But I hear all the time, these kids, they get to camp and they're talking about how they haven't seen each other in a year. And, you know, they mentioned what cities they live in. And I'm like, those cities are bordering. They're 5 minutes from each other. Like, how is this? Like, how is this not, you know, a priority? And again, I understand there's a lot to it, but I definitely think we need to be prioritizing it more.
Well, and it just seems, Aaron, like this would be such a good grounding thing for these kids who a lot of times get shuttled around so often, and you need some of those touchstones. Everybody needs those, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think I grew up with a single mom and she always made sure we were together, and I cannot imagine having gone through a part of my life without my brother and sister. Those are some of the biggest people in my life, and it's really your longest lasting relationship. And if it's not fostered properly at that young age, then you know I run into, you know, kids who they finally, you know, met up, you know, when they were adults, and it's hard. It's a strained relationship. They don't have that huge foundation of childhood built in. It's really too bad.
It'll be interesting to see all, because you said you're a Milwaukee kid. I was a Madison kid, and we were not a camping family. So do you ever get kids who, like, they're excited to see their sibling, but they're not super outdoorsy?
Yes. Oh, yeah. all the time. But, you know, but it's still amazing to see how they blossom in their own way.
Yeah.
I mean, they might not be by the end of the week eating bugs and stuff like some of the boys.
Wait, is that an option? Is that a
challenge?
We
don't encourage it. We don't encourage it.
You can eat grasshoppers. You can't. I was at a Girl Scout camp, and you can eat grasshoppers.
I had a girl last summer.
Just 'cause you can.
I had a girl last summer who caught a frog, and she was getting ready to, I swear, to gut it, and she wanted to cook it on the campfire and eat it. And I was like, hard no. Hard no. No, 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 no.
This is how we get COVID.
Right. I know. So it's funny. There's definitely a lot of kids who, you know, they come with, you know, their nice shoes and their nice clothes, and they think it's, you know, ew, the outdoors. But still, by the end of the week, especially if they have a little brother or sister who's, you know, all up into the mud and stuff, it's so fun to see them just still get down there and play with them. And, you know, even if you knew at the beginning of the week that they were not an outdoorsy person, mm-hmm. but like for their little siblings, they do it. And it's just amazing to see.
That's amazing. All right. Well, before we let you go, where is all the information? If we caught anyone's ear that they might be interested in volunteering or at least learning more about Camp to Belong, where can they get more information, Aaron?
Sure. Our website has everything. So ctb-wi.org, or you can just Google Camp Tubelong, Wisconsin, and it'll come up. And there's, you know, spots to refer campers on there. There's spots to refer yourself if you want to be a volunteer. Again, we're always in need. There's also a donate button if you're just somebody who wants to give us some funds to help support more kids. Any help, again, we'll take it.
All right. Well, great. Well, Aaron Vivian from Camp Tubelong, we will put all of that in our show notes for today. Thanks so much for joining us and letting us know about this opportunity.
Yes, thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, have a great day. And we're going to take another break. When we come back, three headlines and a lie. And we get ready for Dave Mandel, who will be here at 1:06 for the top of the No Sour Ha Ha Fun Time Power Hour. Stay tuned. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Matinair. And this show is just
flying
along. It
really is.
Well, we're very excited. I'm still polishing, because we had a lot of people submit
some great ideas.
Some very good, very creative ideas for shows. And part of some of the creativity, a lot of them are, you know, inspired by other shows, but that's Hollywood,
fine.
Right? Everyone's always stealing other people's ideas.
When are there new ideas? Come on, you got to redo everything 14 times.
Yes, and so we are. At the top of the hour, before David Mandel gets here, I got to polish some of these up, because when he first joins at 106, we're definitely going to talk to him about his career, how he broke in, because I'm pretty sure he's from the Midwest. I think he's from Chicago.
Oh wow!
And so, you know, how a Chicago kid breaks into SNL. And of what that actually looks like. So, like, that's everyone's dream, but not everyone gets to fulfill that dream.
He's been quite accomplished.
He is quite accomplished. Emmy Award winner.
Seinfeld.
Curb Your Enthusiasm. Veep.
I mean, the list goes on.
And we have the trailer that we'll play when he's on for his new HBO show, The White House Plumbers, which is based off, like, Watergate.
Yeah.
And so that, I'm excited. I think it premieres, I don't know if it's premiered yet. It premieres in March, so it's probably within the next week.
I have a special song for him.
Oh. I'm a little nervous because Greg yesterday, did he say this on air or at commercial when he was like, just know that funny people don't always laugh. Like, they'll think it's funny, but they're thinking about why it's funny versus giving you a generous laugh.
Instead of just enjoying it.
Yeah. See, you're a generous laugher, which is why we get along so well. Because you laugh at my jokes very, like that.
Readily. But you do the same for me.
And I do the same for you. Yeah. And so...
Well, we'll take Dave on. We'll see what kind of a chuckle meister he is in life.
But yeah, so stay tuned for that. That's going to be super fun. And we're like... Are you nervous? You've interviewed celebrities before.
I have. But it's always different when it's someone that you really admire, you know?
Whose work you're like, you've done some really cool things.
He's done some really amazing things that I wish I could do.
Yeah.
We'll be fine. It's going to be fine.
All right. So in the meantime, we're going to play the very fun game of three headlines and a lie. Three of these headlines are real. One is fake. Jane, you get to pick out which one is fake. All right. They escaped from jail using a toothbrush. Then they were captured at IHOP.
They broke out of jail using a toothbrush, and then they got busted at breakfast.
Yes.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's number one.
All right.
Number two. Electric scooter startup will use AI to detect how scared you are while riding.
Artificial intelligence?
Well, have you ever ridden like a bird scooter or any of those?
I have not. I have not scootered.
All right. Well, they can be, depending on, especially if you're riding, because in most places, those scooters, you can't ride on the sidewalk.
Right.
Like, I don't know if I've ridden, because they keep getting banned and then unbanned in Milwaukee. But when I lived in LA, we had them. And I once was riding it on the street like you're supposed to, not on the sidewalk, because there's pedestrians on the sidewalk. It's like how you can't ride your bike on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
and zooming along La Cienega in Los Angeles. And at the last minute, I saw that I was about to hit probably a foot in diameter pothole.
Oh, my.
And I just dumped the scooter and jumped off because I would have just gone flying. Because you go.
Yeah, those things can move.
15 miles per hour? And those, yeah. Like, you're moving.
Yeah. And gosh, riding one of those in LA just sounds like a death wish.
And, you know, no one's wearing a helmet. And so headline number two, electric scooter startup will use AI to detect how scared you are while riding.
All right.
Number three, two U.S. mothers sue hospitals over drug tests after eating poppy seed bagels.
That's not outside the realm of possibility. That things like this have happened.
Things like this have happened because poppy seeds obviously
contain something.
Yeah. I think they're connected to heroin.
Poppies. Like, sure.
Yeah, poppies. Yep,
that would make sense.
MSCHF made a free dating simulator that can prepare your federal taxes. MSCHF's free dating simulator that can prepare your taxes. So that's number four. Which of those? You want me to read them again?
Yes.
Number one, these are all headlines, and we're picking out which one's not real. They escaped from jail using a toothbrush, then were captured at IHOP.
Okay.
Number two, electric scooter startup will use AI to detect how scared you are while riding. Mm-hmm. Number three, two U.S. mothers sue hospitals over drug tests after eating poppy seed bagels. And number four, MSCHF made a free dating simulator that can prepare your federal taxes.
Okay, I know the first one is true.
Oh, you do? Okay. Why, you read this?
It came up across my Twitter feed or something. So the guys did escape from prison using a toothbrush and something else, and then they got busted at an IHOP, like, right down the road. Well done,
well
guys.
Well done.
So that I know is true.
Okay.
The AI and the scooter fear, I can see someone wanting to know that.
Okay.
The poppy seeds, I also know that this has happened. And then the last one is the AI, which I also believe to be true.
Which one are you picking?
I'll go with the poppy seeds.
No, that one's real.
That is real.
Yeah. So New Jersey mothers allege hospitals perform tests without consent and say poppy seeds were the reason for false positive results.
So which one was the lie?
The scooter one.
Was it?
Yeah.
Come on, you guys. Somebody has to want to know that. There's got to be a... Let's get a grant, Kristen, and we'll study it ourselves.
Because what does that give you? If you know how scared you are while you're riding a scooter, does that indicate that you probably should not be riding the scooter? You're like, you're a 10 right now. Maybe yeah. Get off.
Maybe this is not for you.
All right. Well, that one was fake, but yes. So MSCHF's... I have to be honest, I don't even know what that stands for. So if you still haven't filed your taxes, MSCHF's free dating simulator that's launching soon might be able to help. The Art Collective, their latest stunt in Tax Haven 3000, a visual novel dating game that actually prepares your 2022 U.S. federal tax return, according to the game's now removed Steam page. This is like gibberish. I have no idea what we're talking about, but it's real.
So it's some kind of dating game that as you play it ostensibly fixes your taxes.
Yeah. Like the pictures, it's like an anime character talking to you. Do you know what this is?
No, but it sounds like a really good way to steal your personal information, you bunch of morons.
That's true.
Don't do that.
That's true. All right. Well, we're going to take a break for the top of the hour news. And when we come back, David Mandel will be here. We're going to talk about his career and politics and pitch him some Wisconsin TV shows and see which ones he thinks could actually get greenlit. So this is As Goes Wisconsin. Come back in a minute.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.